land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, you're going to need to find your brain if you're going to be strong. That is the motto of today. We are being played for fools, ladies and gentlemen. It is a sad day out there. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're going to cover some news, and then we're going to return to Yaketzel Ezekiel. Today, President Joe Biden, just hate saying president in front of a name of a man who I find so utterly disgusting. He was on a conference call today with Chinese President Xi Jinping. His broken record theme was singular. There will be serious consequences if Beijing gives any material support to Russia. And then he described the implications of the consequences if China supports Russia in any way, and he says, in quote, to support their brutal attacks against Ukrainian cities and civilians. Kirk, would you like to guess as to how many civilians have been killed in the Ukraine since the beginning of that war?
I don't know the number. I really don't.
The United Nations.
Close to what we do. Yeah.
Yeah, the United Nations posted it today. 816. So what I'd like to do, since we think that the media would tell you, both the progressives and the conservatives in America would tell you that this is a terrible, most brutal war, uncalled for, this, that, and the other, and the Ruskies are bad, bad, bad. Let's go through the active wars that are currently being waged and the death toll from those wars. So we can put the 816 civilians that have been killed in the Ukraine since the conflict began into focus.
Yes, sir.
The deadliest war in, it's actually two phases, but it's same place and same belligerents. The deadliest war of the last 20 to 30 years, do you know what it is? I would have thought that it would have been Iraq followed by Afghanistan, but that's not the case. 4.8 million people are dead. 4.8 million compared to perhaps a few thousand.
Are we enough?
Evidently, to the media, the progressives, Black Lives Must Not Matter, because it's the Congo
Africa.
War. It's the Congo War. And the Congo War is, if you look up the Congo War and say, well, I really would like to know what in the world is going on here, what you find is that it's essentially a Marxist-led militant groups that are plundering and raping their way through the population, trying to destroy a minority group. 4.8 million people dead. no one is saying, you know, what we need to do is ban Marxism and communism worldwide for having promoted a war that killed 4.8 million people. Most people don't even know where Congo is on a map.
That's very sad.
4.8 million people. Afghanistan, oh, that's a United States tragedy. We were the ones that caused the Russian fatalities in Afghanistan at the tune of almost a million Afghanis when we thought it would be a swell idea to give Russia a taste of what it gave us in Vietnam. And we rented the Taliban from Pakistan and armed them with Stinger missiles so they could shoot down Russian aircraft. Remind you of anything that's happening today?
All over the place, yeah.
Yeah, well,
where we are.
Particularly in the Ukraine, where we're giving right-wing nutcases Stinger missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Afghanistan, 2.1 million fatalities. You can tag virtually all of that on the United States. But do you hear anybody screaming, you know, we need to sanction the United States?
I've actually brought it up.
We need to boycott the United States. We need to give severe pain to the United States. 2.1 million people. We didn't have any reason to be part of killing those people. None.
That's true.
Completely unjustified. India, Pakistan. 2 million. The ongoing jihadist attacks on India and demand for even more territory. 2 million dead. Is anyone trying to ban Pakistan for being the aggressor?
No.
No. The Iraq War. Okay, so we've got the United States falls in number two and number four position here. The Iraq War, 1.2 million people dead. We use shock and awe. We killed, you know, 816 people a second.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about brutal. It's what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, but particularly in Iraq. 1.2 million people dead. Anyone calling for the sanctioning of the United States? The war that actually precipitated the First and Second Congo War, still being waged, is the Rwanda conflict. 800,000 dead, mostly from the Tutsi minority. They've been attacked by armed militias, mostly of the Hutu. In addition to the 800,000 dead, 500,000 women have been raped. And again, most Americans I tell you, Europeans wouldn't even know what happens. How can the progressives that control the media be so supportive of Black Lives Matter and they don't even mention either of these two conflicts? Between the two of them, you have 5.6 million people dead, 500,000 women raped.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, the inspiration for the Rwanda genocide was the Roman Catholic Church. They told the majority that they should assert their influence over the minority. Next one on the list is also the United States. Syria, 600,000 dead, 2.5 million refugees. Somalia, we can also tag that on the United States, 500,000 dead. Anybody screaming to ban the United States? Next is Indonesia. We can pan that on Muslims killing non-Muslims. And yet, with 500,000 dead, do we call for bans on Indonesian oil? They're part of OPEC. Yemeni. You can pin that one on the United States, too. 400,000 dead. Why would you pin it on the United States? Because it's U.S. weapons and U.S. money being funneled to the thugs that run Saudi Arabia that have waged the bombing attack and the brutalization of the civilians there. And it's an Islamic war between Sunnis and Shias.
Shias, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
400,000 dead. Anybody calling for the ban of Saudi Arabian oil? Anyone calling for the ban of the United States for supplying the weapons? Next one is also Islamic in nature. 400,000 dead in the Sudan. If you put all of the Islamic conflicts together, like these last five were all Islamic, Syria, Somalia, Indonesia, Yemen, Sudan, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, plus Iraq, which was the United States' fault, but another 1.2 million, 2.1 million in Afghanistan, and 2 million in, because of Pakistan. So where is the outcry against Islam? The next one is surprising. Now, with 816 civilians killed in Ukraine,
yeah.
The progressive media that says that they're the ones that are not racist don't seem to care that south of our borders, because of America's liberal policies and drug habits, the Mexican drug war has cost the lives of 400,000 civilians. The Mexican drug wars have been 400 times deadlier than the Ukrainian conflict with Russia. 400 times. Is there anybody banning Russia or talk about America's complicity in this?
Yeah.
We have another Islamic factor. Next is Nigeria. Boko Haram. They've killed 360,000 people in Nigeria, the Islamic group. Darfur, which is also blacks on blacks, but this is Muslims killing other Muslims. So this is Muslims killing Muslims, Arab Muslims attacking African Muslims, 300,000. Anybody calling out Islam again? Colombia, the drug wars, primarily because of America's appetite for drugs, 200,000 dead. Myanmar, 200,000 dead. And Moro, which is the Islamic uprising there in the Philippines, 150,000 dead. One of the most brutal conflicts is also in Africa. The Ethiopian conflict right now, the civil war there, is 100,000 dead. The U.S. has been pressing a war in northwest Pakistan with special forces. 79,000 people have been killed. The Turks have been insistent on killing Kurds. They've killed 60,000 of them. Are we trying to ban Turkey? Sanction Turkey? In Iran, which America is about ready to lift sanctions, is about ready to say that it's not a terrorist nation. They have killed 58,000 Kurds. Where is the movement in academia to support the Kurds? They're a real ethnic group. They're not like the fake Palestinians, which are a myth. Congo, 65,000 dead. There's been a terrible war going on between Armenia and Azerbaijan. I don't think ever made it to a major publication. Very recent, 49,000 people killed. No outcry. The Khyber Islamics in Pakistan have killed 45,000. Libya, that was another shock and awe of America. Yeah, we just bombed it back into the Stone Age. 43,000 people killed. The Maghreb and Northern Africa, another Islamic conflict. 29,000 people dead. The Ukraine doesn't rank up there in the top 25 current conflicts in the world.
It's not even a traffic accident.
And yet it's the only thing that this administration will talk about. Galvanizing the world such that it pummels Russia. I did a quick study to find out, since we want to present the Russians as bad and the Ukrainians as good throughout the media and politics, You know, there isn't a tinker's dam worth the difference between Ukrainians and Russians in terms of their GNA. Here's a study that was done in order to investigate the origin of Eastern Slavs. Mitochondrial DNA sequence variation was examined in Russians and Ukrainians by hypervariable segment 1 HVS1 sequencing and restriction analysis of the haplogroup specific sites. No significant differences were found. They aren't different people. So stop this with Ukrainians versus Russians. Ethnically, they are the same people, even in their language. Over 60%, some say 66%, of Russian and Ukrainian share the same vocabulary. They share the same grammar. They're both Slavic languages, and they are exceedingly similar. That is not the worst problem, however, in the Ukraine. Not even the worst problem associated with this. The single worst problem associated with all of this is that the United States is responsible for provoking this war and then is now trying to rally the world to attack the country that it provoked. We provoked the war in two ways. One is that we are the country that inspired and armed the riots that took place during the Obama administration 2013. The stated purpose, according to our State Department and the cables that they sent, was to overthrow the properly elected democratic government of the Ukraine that was pro-Russian and see if a government could be installed that was pro-United States and the West that we could convert into NATO. That was our stated purpose. We did it. What we don't want to tell people, however, is the people that we did it with. Oh, they were not freedom lovers, not by a million miles. They were fascists. We armed the fascists. We have created in the Ukraine, we have watered and cultivated a seed that was already exceedingly prevalent in the Ukraine, of what most would call neo-Nazis. They wear swastikas. They have SS insignias. They swear by the Third Reich. But they're really not neo-Nazis. They predated the Nazis. The largest of these is a group actually that emerged out of the revolt that led to the downthrow of the popular elected government. It's called the Azov terrorist organization. Azov has been recruiting and radicalizing even American citizens. In fact, something in the range of 75,000 of the militia fighters in the Ukraine are neo-Nazis that have been recruited. And guess where their number one support is for recruiting efforts?
United States. I know, I've read that, United States.
It's United States and via Facebook. Facebook is a huge supporter of this fascist group. They've even come out and say that the group shall not be harassed or banned in any way on Facebook platforms. They want them to continue to recruit. I did a study this week of just how prevalent, and neo-Nazi is the term that we use today to describe them, but again, fascists and anti-Semitic groups like this, ultra-nationalist groups like this, actually preceded the fascists in Germany by several hundred years in the Ukraine. The State Department even sought to designate the Azov a terrorist organization. It was brought up to the Defense Department as we were supplying arms, and the Defense Department said, we really ought to not be doing this. It was overridden by the White House. If you look at the insignias of the militia, those that are fighting, when Putin blamed the genocide that was being perpetrated against the Russian people in the far eastern part of the country, particularly in the Donbas region.
Mm-hmm.
Those militias, they're all fascists. You don't have the Ukrainian military out fighting them. No, those that are wearing military uniforms, they're flying the flags of Nazis. That's who's killing them. The situation in the Ukraine is far worse today as it relates to the rise of fascists, anti-Semitic, warmongering fascists, than the situation was in Germany in the late 1920s when the brown shirts took over that country and then were ultimately ground into the ground as Hitler turned the brown shirts into his military and, of course, the SS.
Yes, yeah.
And the like. It's worse. They have a higher percentage, and they're far more armed. Well, American weapons, by the way. They're far more integrated currently into the government. They have government-sponsored militias. It's a far worse situation as it relates to the rise of fascists and fascist militias in the Ukraine than existed in the late 1920s and what became Nazi Germany.
What is wrong with us?
What in the hell is wrong with us? We're actually being played for fools. And you'd have to say, so what is it with the ultra-progressives?
Why
that would cause
press?
Them? Now, I understand they ignore the facts. Facts they don't want. They don't like facts. So we recognize that that is their natural instinct, is to ignore reality and to create a new reality. That this notion that we have an authoritarian government on one side and a freely elected democratic government and freedom lovers on one side and freedom haters on the other, it's all a lie. And, of course, it was Russia's concern that NATO was growing in influence, that the Ukraine was on the cusp of becoming part of NATO. Kamala Harris, 2 days before the invasion, actually stated publicly at a press conference how pleased she was to encourage the incorporation of the Ukraine into NATO. We're sending many, many hundreds of billions of dollars or millions of dollars worth of our most sophisticated weapons into the Ukraine, doing so by full acknowledgement, saying that we're doing it, just as we armed the Mujahideen and the Taliban in Afghanistan. It is the most insane thing I've ever seen. In the midst of all this, there's something else happening that we need to talk about. Not only now are we incorporating China into our enemy and badgering them, but the Iran deal. This administration is about to approve what would be easily the worst negotiation since Neville Chamberlain achieved peace in our time with the Nazis. International Atomic Energy Agency is unable to investigate any of Iran's military or nuclear sites. So they're playing completely blind. The new negotiation does not require Iran to give up any of their highly enriched uranium.
Uranium. Mm-hmm.
It does not require them to do anything related to their intercontinental ballistic missile program, of which they now have a whole fleet of missiles capable of delivering atomic warheads all the way to the United States. It actually removes the international terrorist designation from the Iranian what do they call their militia that is so anti-Israel? I've forgotten the name of their little club, their Islamic club that is so anti-Israel. Certainly you have Hezbollah and the Iranian guards.
Mm-hmm.
Removing the terrorist stigma. Freely giving them all of the money kept by the world, which will all be used to fund terrorism and promote the destruction of Israel. And, oh, by the way, since the United States could not even sit down at the negotiating table, even though this is Biden's deal, the Iranians would not even sit at a table, even enter a room if there was an American there. So guess who has been negotiating on behalf of America?
Chinese,
Russia.
I don't know.
Russia.
Oh, Russia. Okay.
Russia.
As you wanted to do.
Russia. Oh, and so part of the deal that is about
to
be signed is that Russia is going to be paid $10 billion to build, guess what? A nuclear plant.
Nuclear weapon.
Iran.
You can't make this stuff up.
We are so stupid. No, you can't make it up. It is way beyond the holy grail of insanity. So that is my my news.
I'm dumbfounded. I'm totally dumbfounded.
It is genuinely astounding the position we put ourselves in. And of course, I just think it's swell that what you're going to do is you're going to give the most sophisticated weapons that we have to neo-Nazi militias to use against the Russians when the Russians have the largest arsenal of nuclear bombs in the world. And that's what peaceful...
There's a plan.
Yes, people, diplomats, do in their spare time. Because, you know, if we make it impossible, which, you know, that's the Biden's administration's policy, is we want to give them so many weapons that we kill so many Russians that the Russians can't take over Kiev and Odessa. If Putin is the way that the West has him described as the reincarnation of Satan, and knowing that he has more nuclear bombs than anybody else, if we make it such that he is about to lose his grip on power because of the Americans and the Europeans killing so many Russians with their weapons, what do you think he's going to do? Do you think he's going to say, oh, well, you guys beat me. I think I'll just go off and hide in my Black Sea villa.
Yeah, he's going to get revenge.
He is. Absolutely. Yeah. I have nothing to lose. If he is anywhere close to the way that he's being depicted, and we do what we say we're doing, that is that's the way this game is going to play out. That's why it is stunningly stupid. Oh, by the way, I just speaking of stupid, one of these days, you know, I'm going to be run off of Facebook and other sites again. When the last time I was banned from Facebook, it was because I had a program where maybe 1% of that program mentioned a national media report that Hunter Biden's computer had been found, and that it was discovered that the reports of Hunter Biden being up to his eyeballs in corruption and dealings with the Ukrainians, and that the family was profiting because of his father's position as vice president of the United States, that Facebook banned me, pulled the show, and said, this is your first warning, another strike, you're out forever. Turns out that Facebook came up with a policy of trying to suppress all information related to Hunter Biden. And they defended that by stating it was a Russian plot, and therefore it was disinformation. Well, guess what? Turned out that it wasn't a Russian plot. Turned out it wasn't disinformation. Facebook has since said, oh, we're so sorry, we probably shouldn't have done that. And the reports now are that 14% of the people that voted for the idiot-in-chief would not have voted for the idiot-in-chief if they had known the extent and the contents of Hunter Biden's involvement with Ukraine. Oh, what country was that? Oh, it's the Ukraine. Yeah, the country that we're willing to go to World War III.
Nuclear war, support.
Russia did, by the way, announce its terms for ending the war. Ukraine doesn't become part of NATO. Ukraine is demilitarized. Ukraine is denazified, which is probably the single biggest problem.
Amazing, wasn't it?
The people in the eastern part of Ukraine and in Crimea that were so bludgeoned by the neo-Nazi groups can stay as part of Russia if they choose to. And that I think those are pretty much his conditions.
Yeah, there's a few little nuances, I think, but it's pretty close.
If you'd say,
it's not the most horrible thing that could happen.
Yep. But that's not.
Or you can continue to kill people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yaketzel, God grows. And by the way, we're not advocating for Putin. I think that would be a foolish thing to do. I'm just saying that that the lack of truth.
Everybody's
here,
nuts.
Is beyond anything I've ever seen, and the lack of reason is the worst thing I've ever seen. So my concern is that we have moved into the world of make-believe where we're playing a video kind of game in the land of make-believe, not recognizing that there's real weapons involved and there's no rebooting.
No coming back.
This game.
No.
There is no coming back from it. Was onto this some 2,600 years ago. He inspired Yaketzel, which means, among other things, God's grows, Ezekiel. And the last statement we ended with this time a week ago. By the way, on social media, I was supposed to make an announcement as to the group that is being marketed this particular day, and so I think it's a shout out now. It's to Boston, Massachusetts. So those of you from Boston, you are welcome to the program. We're going to talk about what Yahweh, who is God's one and only name, said to his prophet Yaketzel, which means God grows some 2,600 years ago. It's tough medicine, but it is the same prescription that is conveyed through every prophet. Disaster upon disaster, calamity upon calamity, misfortune will come, and rumor upon rumor, hearsay upon conspiracy. Shamua el Shamua, unverifiable opinions and false testimony, fake news, lifeless and stupefying messages, horrifying reports, which are unsubstantiated. Boy, that sounds like the kind of stuff that gets you banned on Facebook for sure.
Yeah.
We're going to ban, they're going to ban Yahweh.
He'll never make it. Y'all will never make it.
Yeah, we'll come to exist. And they will seek a revelation from a prophet. Well, the Torah is lost on the ministers, the priests, and the clerics, and on the council and the advice of the society's leaders. They want a prophet. No, they're going to have one. It's called a false prophet. They're going to have one indeed. They want a prophet. They claim, of course, their rabbis, the ones they venerate so much, all claim to be prophets. They didn't get any prophecy correct, mind you, but nonetheless, they all want to be known as prophets. The reality is, we don't need any more prophets. In fact, Yahweh's not going to give us any more prophets. His last witness is simply a messenger. someone who is conveying the message that he is already
reported
on our behalf through his prophets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But here it's saying that they're looking for a prophet when they have plenty. They just don't like what the prophets have to say. And yet they're ignoring the Torah. That's tough for Jews to take because the Haredim will claim that they are Torah observant. But the Torah they observe isn't the Torah at all. They just simply renamed their Talmud the Torah. But does this sound like the introduction to this program? Disaster upon disaster?
Mm-hmm.
Will come rumor upon rumor, hearsay upon conspiracy. They will all come to exist. They're going to seek some kind of a revelation from a prophet. Well, the Torah is lost on the religious and on the counsel and advice of the society's leaders. Yeah, do you hear anybody out there saying, you know, the answer is probably in the Torah? Let's see what the Torah and prophets have to say about this event. You know, if you're Yahweh and you wanted to pick the perfect place for a man to start World War III, because time is running short and you're just sick of the whole thing, be hard to do better than the Ukraine. It's the birthplace of the most viral and disgusting form of Judaism in the history of the religion. Haredim all come from Baal Shem Tov in the Ukraine. That's why there were millions of Ukrainians prior to the last World War. Only about 50,000 remain out of several million. And so the worst of the program, some 80% of them worldwide, took place in the Ukraine. The most vicious of them took place in the Ukraine. And for the longest period of time, going back 400 and 500 years, taking place in the Ukraine. And so not only do you have the people who have been the most belligerent to his people and the people who currently are the most identified with neo-Nazis, you also have the birthplace of the religion that you despise. Pretty hard to find a better place. Did you check any of these words? Were they among the ones that you analyzed, Kirk?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can.
And what did you find?
Well, let's see. The disaster and disaster is the word hoa. And it means ruin. It means disaster in the context of, believe it or not, a wicked event. It's perverse mischief. It's a natural. I mentioned that natural disasters are not wicked, nor are they perverse. But man-made or induced disasters can certainly be. So I thought I would point that out. This, and if you look at the letters, you have a hey, why hey, which could easily be interpreted as man increases man, or man increases man's, or their egos. When I moved on, I took all the keywords, by the way, and for people who've never studied the letters, all the words have meanings as well, and especially in the pictographs, it's very easy to determine what they're. What Yah's trying to say through those, and I use it as a double check on everything. So rumors upon rumors, and that's Shemua, and that is a rumors, messages, news. It's from Shama to hear, and from Shamin, meaning to be a desolate, appalling, horrifying announcement, and not necessarily truthful.
Boy, that sounds like today's newspaper.
I'm telling you, I'm kind of shaken. I actually physically feel awful reading as you read all those things. I just, I'll calm down in a minute, but it's just like, wow. The, I'm usually not that emotional, but it's pretty
bad.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing that back in 1945, America liberated many of the concentration camps where some 6 million Jews had been killed from the fascists. And we did so actually with the help of Russia. And now the United States is fighting Russia while arming and abetting the worst and most aggressive fascists in the world. We've come a long way since the mid-1940s, haven't we?
Yeah. Well, these words are really revealing if you want to dig in a little bit deeper.
Sure, go ahead.
For instance, yeah, the rumors, the words have a negative connotation. I don't know of anything but a rumor that would be a positive. The shin can be a sharp pressing language. The mem can be overwhelming and chaotic because it's water, and powerful water. The wa in the word means to add, perhaps the addition of the ayin, which would be man's perspective, to confuse the man observing. The rumors and rumors are never, never, never positive. So you're safe on that one. And then a little side note.
Yeah, if you look at some of the tweets, you've got biting teeth.
Biting teeth,
represents Gentiles. So the biting teeth of Gentiles establishing themselves with the tent peg from their perspective. Boy, that would be haunting today. As they stand up and reach up, and the man standing there, of course, is raising his hands and his arms. So this is not good from that perspective, is it?
No, sir. No, sir. I put a little side note on the root shin mem words, and I did a study last night on all the words to begin or have shin mem in them are vastly, extremely negative. Examples would be shemad, which I thought was an interesting word, and I tried to analyze that a little bit, which means destroy. And interestingly, because we know who's going to destroy, when you look at the shin, it's the language of words that, with the help of the set apart spirit, the symbolized here with the life cleansing water symbol of the mem, followed by the let, which is most identified with Pesach doorway to life, and, of course, Dode, I call him Double D, Dode, who destroys the religion upon his return in Kippurim. I don't think that's a stretch. It's not necessary to present the story, but it's just curious. These are just curious to me. Yeah.
Yes.
And then just what you just read, and then you will seek a revelation, that's Shazon, which is a vision, the ability to see beyond the physical and the physical presence of light that pierces through the darkness. The path, symbolically, the path is cut, that's the Zayin, through the barrier, which is the Chet, to increase, that's the Wa, the children.
Yeah.
And
you know what's interesting,
too,
is that this revelation they're seeking is from a prophet. Do you know that the majority of the time that Yahweh uses the term prophet, he's not speaking of someone who speaks for him, because he doesn't even need to, because the fact that people like Moshe and Dode and Yahkatzel, they're so obviously prophets because they tell us what happened in the distant past and what will happen in the distant future, writing it all down so that we can verify that they indeed were inspired by someone who exists outside of the constraints of time. But God is constantly speaking of false prophets. You know, there was the 850 prophets of Baal and Asherah that Eliyah confronted. This is a false prophet here. That's what they're seeking, is a false prophet.
It's no way
very, very common. Yeah, and also
you're going to avoid the Torah. Yeah.
Right. Well, so while there were 40 good Nabi, the majority of Nabi are rotten to the core. They exemplify what's wrong with religion. Cohen is the same thing. Yahweh established the Lowi to be his Cohen, to be his priest, and they were specifically assigned the responsibility of educating people on the family on the merits of the Torah and helping them understand the functionality and the benefits of the Moed Mikra. That's what they were called to do. And very, very comprehensive instructions as to how they were to do that and live within the society. But the majority of the time that he mentions Cohen is to besmirch and indict religious leaders. In fact, Yahkatzel, like Malachi, like Zachariah, like Yashayah, Isaiah, like Yirmiyah. They're all the same. Hosha. The primary theme, the dominant theme is Yahweh's unrelenting attack against Judaism in all of its various forms and flavors. And you know, I see occasionally you'll see the name of a rabbinical apologist on the slide. He's Clifford, I guess, is what his name is. He is one of these that says, well, you know, they're not really attacking Judaism because at the time the Torah was written, Judaism didn't exist. Well, double wrong. One of the things that religious Jews don't recognize is that the Torah and prophets are one integrated message. There is Torah, mm-hmm. teaching and guidance, instructions and directions throughout the prophets, and there is prophecy throughout the Torah. They are integrated, one in the same. Same inspiration. They write the name of Yahweh out, so they probably don't know that. But exactly the same voice that speaks through the Torah is the same voice that speaks through the prophets, and the teaching and instructions are the same. Second is that Jewish religiosity was on full display during the Exodus. Well, they created the golden calf. Even mm-hmm. Aaron was part of the inspiration for it.
Yes.
And Yahweh dealt with the religiosity of his people and had them killed. He, because of their religious rebellion, they had to mm-hmm. wander in the wilderness for 40 years. That generation had to pass. There's only two of them that were allowed into the promised land out of the entire mm-hmm. group, because God's disdain for Jews being religious is one of the most egregious acts recorded in the Torah. And in fact, the flood, if you read the definition of the people that were that Yahweh wanted to eliminate, they were mm-hmm. being political, religious, and militaristic.
And using his name, though, right?
Right.
Is that correct?
So, yeah. So religion, God's animosity to the Jews being religious goes all the way back to the early accounts of the Torah. It happens to be the problem he had with Babylon. It's why Abraham had to leave Babylon, which is the birthplace of institutionalized religion and the integration of religion and politics and militarism. And he had to leave those places before he could go on. And it shows a complete ignorance for the prophets, because the overriding, the foremost theme of the prophets, Yashayah, I mean, it's dominant. The first, like, 14 chapters of Yashayah are all a single theme. God saying, I hate it when my people are religious. And he's condemning Judaism. And his condemnations in Yashayah, Yirmiyah, Hosha, Yaketiah are all directed not only to their behavior at that moment the prophet was speaking, but he extrapolates all of it to his return in the last days and saying it's even more disgusting then. From God's perspective, the single most debilitating thing that has ever happened to his people is Judaism. Mm.
Pretty clear.
Now, and it's overwhelming. It's ubiquitous. It's undeniable. It is the number one theme written throughout the prophets. All right, so here's God is saying that we're reaching a period where it's just nothing but disaster upon disaster, rumor upon rumor, hearsay upon conspiracy, false testimony, fake news, lifeless and stupefying message, horrifying reports, many that are unsubstantiated. And in the midst of it all, they're going to seek a revelation from a prophet while the Torah is lost on them, particularly on the religious. And it's also lost on the society's leaders. That is why they're in this pickle. The consequence of religion and human governance is a disaster upon disaster. And for both, it is a steady stream of unfounded opinions, none of which are verifiable. I guess the only real benefit of the rumors and innuendos and conspiracies and false reports surrounding the Ukraine is that it's masking the consequence of the horrific approach to corona, where our governments and governments around the world all did the wrong thing almost all of the time and perpetrated a colossal calamity on humankind. And that was followed by completely devastating the world's currencies and economies.
Yes.
And then in the midst of all that, you have the myth of man-made climate change, requiring great redistribution of wealth and destruction of man's productivity. And then on top of all that, you had this onslaught of cancel culture and wokeism and progressives, where they've gone so far beyond political correctness. Political correctness is lies are promoted as the truth is condemned. But it is so far beyond that where it is now, truth simply doesn't matter. Evidence is just of no consequence. The most liberating country in the history of humankind, and you know I'm not a patriot, Kirk.
No,
so I'm not
saying this because
I'm an American patriot, because I'm not. I'm more disgusted by my country than I am pleased by it.
Mm-hmm.
But as it relates to Black Lives Matter and progressives, where they want to present America as inherently racist and we have to have reparations and this sort of thing because minorities have been discriminated against. Well, because of Yahweh's Torah and prophets, I've done a lot of study of human civilizations. I wanted to find why was God so against human government and institutionalized religion.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned is there's not an example anywhere in the world to find a single civilization of all of them that didn't have a caste system and oppressed their own people, whose economy was not driven by slave labor.
Yes.
And who belligerently attacked their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
robbing them of their children and of their crops and of their monies. They were all vicious. It doesn't matter if you're talking about the Romans or the Carthaginians or the Trojans or the Spartans or the Greeks or Babylonians or the Persians or the
Pick 'em.
Medes. It doesn't matter. The Hittites, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Aztecs, the Incas, the Mayans, the Phoenicians. You know, I was studying something that just made me sick as I was completing the introduction to God about what I saw as a return to Jezebelian influence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to look up Jezebel because I wanted to make sure that I wrote her name correctly. And I just, you know, I said, I'm going to glance and just see this bad woman, what it was that about her. You know, she came from Phoenicia. And she brought with her the Baal, the Lord, and the Asherah cults. As
mm-hmm.
a matter of fact, was Baal. The Lord, El, God. So the name of the God was the Lord God. And she brought that with her into Israel. And do you know what their most dominant religious practice was?
Probably human sacrifice, maybe?
Not just human sacrifice, babies.
Babies, yeah.
And they had this
rite
where they would take the babies and make them wear masks with smiling faces as they draped them on the arms of the Lord God and built fires underneath them and roasted them alive.
Mm.
That's how they appeased their God. That was the religion this woman brought into Israel. Think God's not disgusted by his people? Now, this revelation is very much like Yahweh decided that, I just think I'll read some snippets from the media circa 2022 and share that via the prophet so that when they read it, they will know that I inspired this message. We are entering the era of fake news. And I actually cringe when I use that because the truthers, the conspiracy nuts out there and the right-wing fanatics love to talk about fake news. And most of what they call fake news isn't fake at all. It just doesn't chive with their
counter
agenda.
To theirs. Yeah,
yeah,
counter to them, their position, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that the news media now is more apt to deceive than tell the truth. I've never seen it as bad as it was during Corona, where the news media became exceedingly counterproductive. And that was followed by then what they did in the most recent presidential elections here in the United States, where they not only set an agenda, but they decided what could and could not be communicated and formed alliances with technology companies to ensure their control of news. And then that's followed now by this fiasco where the United States playing the Cuban Missile Crisis game all over again decided to be belligerent and militaristic as opposed to diplomatic. Hearsay and gossip are stupefying the masses. We are now prone to believe the most absurd conspiratorial claims. Unable to think, lacking integrity, unable to accept responsibility, people are infecting this planet and destroying it. And it's about to get very, very dark before the arrival of the light. The world seeks a prophet at a time that men and women would be best served to consider the foremost of them, Moshe and the Torah. God has revealed what's going to occur and why it's going to happen, and yet his testimony is squandered by the religious and tossed aside by the political. Rabbis voice their concerns, not God's. Not one in a million Jews knows what awaits them. Even though Yakitzel's dire warning has been available for 2,600 years. By telling us that people will seek to be inspired by a prophet, Yahweh is revealing that the planet is ripe for the man of iniquity, perhaps even providing the basis of the claims made on behalf of the false prophet in Revelation 16. Looking for redemption in all the wrong places, those who have been led to believe that evidence no longer matters and that conspiracies are true will believe the most outlandish of lies. There isn't a decent human being in the cadre of world leaders, not one who can be trusted. And yet this chorus of conceited and comatose is meaningless muttering compared to what's going to come. Speaking of the Kohen, the ministers and priests, and thus the rabbis and pastors of today, of the Ista, the advice and counsel of the Zaken, society's most prominent leaders, as well as the mishpat, the judgment of the Malek, heads of state, and of the Gaom, Oz, the arrogant and empowered. This is what God says next. The heads of state, the Hamalak, will respond emotionally and out of context, lamenting the sad state of affairs. They're going to react rather than think, constantly oblivious to the negative influences. This was scribed, by the way, in the hit pile and perfect, which means continually oblivious to that which is actually influencing the world around them. That was the translation of a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And these leaders who govern, the Nasi, the world's ruling elite, are cloaked in anxiety and ruin. They're adorned in death and destruction. Even the influence in the hands of the people of the land and possibly the earth, Eretz, are paralyzed with bewilderment and dismay. They're terrified and terrorized, intimidated and despondent. Based upon their way, I will do with them, says Yahweh. And according to their judgment and justifications, their decisions, I will judge them, deciding their fate. So then as a result, they will recognize and acknowledge that indeed I am Yahweh. That sounds wonderful. They're going to recognize that I am Yahweh. It's not wonderful. It's tragic.
No, not for them. They're going to know what's coming.
Right.
Who's coming.
They're
going to
know who is killing them. They're going to know who is mm-hmm. humiliating them as they're being humiliated, because right now
you
there isn't a single religious or political Jew that will even say Yahweh's name. But they're going to know it in the end. I'll guarantee you that.
Yes,
there's leaders who govern it. They're cloaked in anxiety and ruin. They're adorned in death and destruction. The influence in the hands of the people of the land are paralyzed with bewilderment and dismay. Boy, did that ever happen. Now, not only with the events of today and Russia and the Ukraine and the United States being the cheerleader for all of this, but also coming out of the myth of Corona. And
mm-hmm.
and then the myths between those two, of course, there was the World Conference on Climate Change. It's the big three of being paralyzed with bewilderment. Based upon their way, God says, I will do with them. God is fair. You know,
mm-hmm.
that you want to be disopposed to me, I'm going to put you in the place that is opposed to me. I'm going to take all of you
yeah.
and put you together. You can have each other according to your judgment or lack thereof. And according to your justifications, according to your decision, I'm going to judge them, deciding their fate.
Yeah,
that means, you know, here, hold your damn Torah, your Talmud, up right here. I'm going to judge you based on that. Fair enough? I'm going to judge you by that ridiculous religious outfit you're wearing. Fair enough? I'm going to judge you by the way you treat women. I'm going to judge you by the way you treat me, God is saying. God's fair. Not
yes.
going to be a fair day for the religious, but God will be fair. He's going to give them what they dished out. This is precisely what we're witnessing. As a consequence of academic indoctrination by the most liberal, and the conspiracies and politics of the most conservative, no one is thinking, especially in context. It's my biggest mm-hmm. problem today, and it's been that way now for the last probably 10 years, is the failure to consider things in context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, for example, climate's changing. Yeah, it's true. But if you
yeah.
put it in context of the history of our Earth that we can look at in terms of global warming and global cooling program times. It's exactly what we'd expect. It's nothing out of the ordinary in terms of the history of our planet. If you put it in context, you'd realize that man's contribution to this current warming period is really negligible.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
It's not to say that the warming period isn't significant. It is.
No.
But man's contribution to it is quite negligible. And even beyond that, let's just pretend for a moment that man's contribution was the driving factor, and it's 5% versus 95%. But let's just pretend it was the other way around. Even if humankind stopped doing everything productive, we didn't make electricity anymore. We didn't drill and refine fuels anymore. We didn't develop any more drugs or build any more hospitals. We didn't build any more roads. We didn't invent and distribute fertilizers to grow more crops or come up with better means of harvesting those crops. We just stopped. We didn't do anything anymore. Even 1%. We could shut down everything, redistribute 100% of the world's wealth. Wouldn't change anything. So there's no context. So yes, you can say, temperatures are on the rise. There's some consequences of that. But even then, if you look at the history, because there has been five or six of these cycles during full cycles, so, 12 between highs and lows over the period of recorded history, because these cycles typically last 300 to 600 years. So over the period of recorded history. And you know something? Without fail, the warming periods are best for humanity.
Yeah.
And the cooling periods are the worst for humanity.
All the plagues.
So.
Yeah.
You got to look at things in context. If you take them out of context, you got nothing. Yeah, it's like I kept on trying with the Ukraine and Russia to put it in context. I mean, the context here was the Cuban Missile Crisis being played out again and us not responding intelligently as Kennedy and Khrushchev did, backing the world away from war as opposed to aggravating war. Context. The context of why is this government empowered versus the government that existed in 2012, 2013. What's the history of that? Oh, how does this war that everyone is screaming about fit within the context of wars and death on the planet as a whole? Context. That's why we had that discussion. When we were talking about the coronavirus, and I said the first month that it was beginning to be noticed here in America, that I said when it's all said and done, which you're going to find out, that we will have understated the number that have contracted the coronavirus because A, 80% of people are asymptomatic, they're never going to be tested, and B, when we finally have this virus has mutated, viruses all mutated to become less deadly but more viral, more contagious, and so it'd be a time where virtually no one is tested. So a lot more people are going to have it than are reported that have it, and then I said also, we are taking comorbidities and ascribing them all to COVID so that we found that 96% of people that are categorized as a COVID death have three or more comorbidities that would have killed them even if they did not have the coronavirus. So we overstated the death toll by about 10 times, almost 15 times. We understated the number of people that actually contracted the coronavirus by about 15 times. When the numbers all shake out, what I said is what we're going to find out is that the coronavirus, while bad, and it was bad, no question, it has some lingering effects. It's a bad virus, and likely a designed virus that got out by accident. But The death toll is about the same as a bad year of flu, about 1 in 1,000. That's what it's all going to shake out to in the end. And to completely deprive people of their freedoms and their livelihoods over that is to fail to see things in context. When you say the science says we need to have lockdowns, and you don't put that in context, well, if we have a lockdown, how many more women are going to be savagely beaten? How much many more deaths are we going to have from alcoholism and suicide and drug abuse? What's going to be the overall cost to our society for having destroyed our currency and our economy? What's going to happen to our society as a result of paying people not to work so that they really don't want to go back to work when it's all over? What's going to be the consequence to our character when we willingly give up our freedoms without a fight? So context, that is what we lack today. That's why someone like Cliff, who's the person that they're writing about here, who's the apologist for rabbinic Judaism, he lacks context. He can't see the history of the development of the religion or the fact that it's the dominant theme throughout the prophets. Totally blind to it. So all he sees is the world through the microcosm of the rabbis and his religion. Context. It is essential. It's essential too when understanding God's animosity of the toward the religious in Israel, because if it had not been for rabbis, there would be no Christianity and no Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So the two most popular, the dominant religions of the world, are both created because of rabbinical malfeasance.
Same trough. Yeah.
Yeah. And the religion most devastating to his people, Judaism, is also a rabbinic product. So I'd like to share an example of reacting emotionally and out of context by returning to the scene of the crime. 2013, I shared this briefly, but I want to get more into detail. During the Obama administration, the president approved a CIA initiative to overthrow the democratically elected government of the Ukraine. The theory was that if the pro-Russian government could be brought down by a riotous mob in Kiev, brokered by the United States and supported by the neo-Nazis, Russia's response to the coup would justify the continued existence of NATO, which had become an albatross, unpopular in Europe and the United States. As predicted, Russia was unwilling to accept the confiscation of what had once been their territory and the resulting flow of weapons into the Ukraine. And they would chafe at the designs of the West to make the former Russian state part of a hostile military alliance. President Putin, therefore, amassed troops along the Ukrainian border to garner the world's attention with an ultimatum similar to the Cuban Missile Crisis. But rather than doing the right thing, which would have been to demilitarize the Ukraine and to shelve NATO, and to end the prospect of conflict, the United States did the opposite and provoked the invasion they have subsequently condemned. And the United States and Europe continue to taunt the nation with sufficient nuclear weapons to obliterate the planet. Inconceivably, the U.S. and her NATO allies are igniting the fuse on those bombs by pledging to send hundreds of billions of dollars worth of their most sophisticated weapons to the Ukraine, assuring greater carnage while negating the possibility of an acceptable conclusion. And even if they were to prevail, those weapons will be wielded by neo-Nazis. In the process, one of the least functional and most unethical governments in the world today, one that has routinely welched on paying its international debt, one that enslaves and drugs its orphans in serious proportions. The orphanages throughout the Ukraine are for forced labor, and it's all as it relates to the imposition, the forced imposition of drugs on those children. The
really?
Nation with one of the, if not the worst, alcohol problems in the continent. The nation with the worst treatment in terms of the of sexual slavery of its women. The Ukraine is, as they would say, it's a hot mess. And it's the nation right now that has the biggest problem with neo-Nazism in the world. And we have lit the fuse on the nuclear weapons. You know that Russians accused the United States of helping the Ukrainians develop biological weapons. And the first response by the Americans was to say, oh, no, it's not true. That's just a fake report. And the thing that made me say, you know, I think it probably is true.
I'd look into
the
it.
The next
yeah.
day, the narrative of the echo chamber was, if the Russians use biological weapons in the Ukraine, it'll be a red line. In other words, they were projecting.
Ready for it. Poised, yeah.
They were projecting what they had already done. Well, they had a congressional hearing. My wife showed me the video of it. The woman who is the chief scholar for such things, representing the intelligence community of the United States. And she was before the moment she was being questioned by Rubio down in Florida. And Senator Rubio said, ma'am, if there's a there's, of course, no truth to the rumor that the United States is manufacturing chemical and biological weapons in Ukraine. Now, he actually staged the question so that she could give, no, there's no truth to that, because what we were doing, and the Russians accused us of having labs, just like the Hunan lab, that were studying and developing chemical and biological weapons as opposed to actually producing them. But he was producing them, so he was aiding and abetting the question that the answer that he wanted. But she didn't give it to him. She says, well, sir, that's not exactly true. The fact is we are, and we have been for some time. He about had a conniption fit. He didn't even know what to do. He went apoplectic. And subsequently it's been found out that there were over 20 such labs that the United States had sponsored in the Ukraine to develop chemical and biological weapons. It just gets worse and worse.
Gosh.
And now the NATO allies are pledging all of this money to the Ukraine, sending the most sophisticated weapons, negating any possibility of an acceptable solution.
Yeah. Peace, yeah.
The people who treated Jews worse than the Nazis. Yes. In the Ukraine, Jews were treated worse than the Nazis, even before Hitler rose to power. And they still celebrate the fascist collaborators who are being cast as innocent victims. Please tell that to the mothers and fathers of the Jews who watched as Ukrainians ripped the arms and legs off their children and smashed their heads against the walls of their homes. Just as Yahweh predicted, the heads of state are all wrong, reacting out of context rather than thinking. And they are all adorned in death and destruction, from Putin to Biden and all of the talking heads in between. But alas, perhaps the Russian president is right in one regard, because he calls the West an empire of lies. The media and the progressives to whom they pander have gone so far as to call this the most barbaric invasion of one nation by another since World War II. How was it they missed what the United States did in Iraq with Operation Shock and Awe, the bombardment of Libya back to the Stone Age, the making a bad situation worse invasion of Afghanistan, the other destruction of Syria, or even America's failed mission in Vietnam. The Russians have killed 1,000, while the Americans have killed millions. Spellbound by such nonsense, people around the world are paralyzed and bewildered. Their economies are broken, their leaders have gone mad drunk on power, and the world is racing to war. This is not the way you want to meet God. No one who is judged by him will survive the experience unscathed. Some will die, ceasing to exist. But most of the people on this list will endure a different and far more agonizing humiliation. Immediately after discovering that Yahweh is indeed God, and that the Torah they rejected is God's only means to reconcile the bereft relationship, they will be condemned by Yahweh to eternal separation. Beyond the fact that those who are the most revered are the most despised by God, what's interesting here is that Yahweh will evaluate religious and political schemes by their rules and will respond like they treated others. They will endure what was opined by Akiba and Maimonides, Machiavelli and Marx, Muhammad and Paul, Biden and Putin. Just as they criticized and excommunicated, even sought to incarcerate or murder those who opposed them, they themselves will be opposed by God, finding themselves estranged and imprisoned. Humankind is in a race with death. And as it turns out, most of those whom God would need to sweep away prior to his return will already be dead, the product of mankind's malfeasance. Well, certainly, Yahweh's response is fair. It's even just. He provided the means for us to extend our lives, but most of us chose to ignore and reject his advice. This is now Yahkezel 22:24. And the word of Yahweh came to exist with me, to convey, son of man, say to her, yours is a filthy and immoral land. She will receive no rain upon her in the day of animosity and anger. Before we go on, has the day of animosity and anger occurred?
Is it anger? Oh,
no,
God, yes.
It has not occurred. Yahweh has not fulfilled the day of animosity and anger. The day of animosity and anger happens to be the day of reconciliations.
Yeah,
Kippur. They're one and the same. One and the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's going to be a remnant reconciled, and that's going to be a marvelous celebration. But the majority of God's people are going to be obliterated.
Yeah.
And they're going to fare better than the world at large. I've said this a number of times as I've spent the last year or so in the prophets, is that it appears that the numbers of those, the quantity of those individuals who are going to return to Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to recognize that Yahweh is God. They're going to value his Torah. They're going to engage in the covenant. The number are going to be exceedingly small. And that among Jews, I suspect that the number is going to be approximately 1 in 1,000. And among Goyim, non-Jews, about 1 in 1,000,000. Now, there are so many more Goyim than Jews, one in a million goyim is actually a larger quantity of people than one in a thousand Jews. But nonetheless, it's going to be exceedingly small numbers. Now, the one in a million happens to be the number that Yahweh laid out there when he was just beginning to reveal the Torah, when he etched the second statement on the first of the two tablets in stone. When the first of those statements says, I am Yahweh. He introduced himself by name. I am Yahweh. Religious
concept.
To that. I am Yahweh.
Yahweh.
Your God who liberated you, who freed you from bondage. You will not continue to exist with any other God in my presence. And that includes Hashem, G-D, Adonai, the Lord, or blessed be he. The second statement is really quite long. And it says, don't be religious. Don't hang around religious people. Don't hang around religious buildings. Don't hang around religious art. Do not be religious. That's what it says. At the end of it, God says that fathers will corrupt their children, the third and fourth generation, which is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Religious Jews conceive religious Jews. Political Jews conceive political Jews. It happens among the Goyim as well.
Sure.
But that's what he says. And then he says that his mercy, redemption, reconciliation, will be afforded to thousands. And it will be afforded to those thousands based upon those who are observant of the terms and conditions of the covenant. One in a thousand amongst billions is one in a million. If you take thousands, I should say. He says it's going to be available to thousands, not one in a thousand. It'll be available to thousands. Thousands amongst billions is one in a million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the numbers that we're going to expect. I think it'll be more like one in a thousand of Yehudim.
Yehudim.
Mm-hmm. The numbers are going to be small. And that's why it's called the Day of Animosity and Anger. Because there'll be far more people eliminated on this day because God is disgusted with us. He's coming back in a mind frame of righteous indignation than are going to be united with him. A tragic waste of design and energy and effort. So he's sad. He goes on to say the treasonous conspiracy, the Kesher, the conscious and planned rebellion and defiance of authority by those in league who league and conspire together of her prophets and those who claim to speak for God. So the treasonous conspiracy of the religious in her midst will be like a roaring and vicious lion seeking to pluck away and rip apart, mangling its prey.
Sound like a Benjamite we know.
The souls being devoured are the most treasured and precious of things. And they have been taken with many who are bound and forsaken by their rabbis, including widows. Almana he Rabbah in her midst. So here is the word of Yahweh. If you want to disagree with this, I guess speaking to the Jewish apologists on behalf of the religion, your argument is with Yahweh. You can slander me or poke fun at me all day long if you wish. The fact of the matter is, these are the words of Yahweh, and he just happens to be God. He is the only way you can escape this life alive. And this is the word, Wahdabar, of Yahweh, which came to exist to convey Son of Man, Son of Adam. Say to her, that means say to Yahweh's people, yours is a filthy and immoral land. She will receive no rain upon her in the day of animosity and anger. Rain is a symbol of life. Without rain, the plants don't grow, the rivers don't flow, the civilizations and the towns, they dry up.
We know that in
everything
California.
Turns to dust and goes away. Now, I think this is both an accurate reflection of what's going to happen. I think that we are going to see tremendous droughts in places that are already short of water. You happen to be living in the midst of one of those, Kirk,
yes,
in the People's Republic of California.
So
there's going to be no rain, but this is the day of animosity, and he's speaking to Israel. So it is, this is the nation of Israel and Jews between now and his return in 2033, your 6,000 Yah. He calls them a treacherous conspiracy of prophets. So it's a treacherous conspiracy of the religious. And then says this treacherous conspiracy of the religious in her midst are like a vicious and roaring lion seeking to pluck away, rip apart, and mangle its prey. That's what he thinks of your rabbis. Souls are being devoured, which God says are the most treasured and precious thing in the universe. They're taken and seized and forsaken by her rabbis, including the widows, Almanah, Ha, Rabbah, in her midst, Yakitzel 22:25. Her clerics, Cohen again, those who have usurped the role of priests and thus her rabbis, or ministers, those claiming authority over the rituals and rites of the religion, have misappropriated and wrongly stripped away aspects of, diminishing the appeal of my Torah, my teaching and guidance. And they did this by imposing their Torah of the mouth, their Babylonian Talmud. And any time you ask a Jew to defend their religious position, they cite the Talmud.
Yes, they do.
They have, in God's word, stripped away aspects and diminished the appeal of my Torah, of Yahweh's Torah, because of their preference for their rabbis. He goes on to say, they treat what I have designated as special with contempt, defiling what I have set apart. Chalal Kodesh Ani. Failing to make the connections required to understand. They're unable to make the distinction between the set apart and that which is ordinary and common. This is another of those challenges. The failure of the religious to appreciate the concept of Kodesh, set apart. Set apart is unique. To be set apart and unique and special is to be the antithesis of common. The most common two things in Israel today would be religion and politics.
Yeah.
Liberal politics and religion. Those are the common threat. I could say also conservative politics.
Yeah.
Likud is also popular. So liberal and conservative politics on one side and religion on the other. That is what's common. And God said, you don't understand the distinction between common and special, unique, set apart. To be set apart unto God is to be set apart from that which is common. What is the thing that's the most common? Religion and politics. This distinction is just lost on them. So what God says is special, they defile. Oh, they have a conniption fit over 1,000 ways to do nothing. Probably 1,000 is not fair. 1,000,000 ways to do nothing on the Shabbat. How you can do nothing on the Shabbat. They're experts at it. That's not the purpose of the Shabbat. It's not to do nothing. To celebrate the relationship.
Where you are.
The Shabbat is a day of celebration of our relationship with Yahweh. It's not a day to do nothing. But they can impose all sorts of religious rules. You know what is particularly sad about Kodesh? It's the concept, just like Torah, the religious Jews have corrupted Torah to mean Talmud.
Yes.
That's sick. They have also corrupted the concept of Kodesh to be kosher.
To be rabbinic?
And they've created this entire series of another million laws as to how you have to be kosher. And you're not considered a good Jew unless you're kosher. Well, God says nothing about kosher. Kodesh set apart, yes. Nothing about kosher. There are no food laws in the Torah. Food laws exist in the Talmud.
Yeah.
God says some of these things are good for you to eat. These things are not good for you to eat. That's not a law.
No, that's advice.
God never says you can't have a cheeseburger. You can't mix dairy and meat. Never says it, but oh my God, it's a hard and fast rule. They won't even have the same sink in a kosher home. You got to wash your dairy in one sink, and you got to wash everything else in another sink. You got to go 4 hours between a course that has anything in it, everything in it other than dairy, to have your dessert that might include some dairy. It's all made up. All God said is don't boil a meat.
Goat and milk.
And the mother's milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Abraham was having a meeting with Yahweh, it was go put a lamb on the Barbie, and he had Sarah bring out some curds. We're talking about a cheeseburger here. But
yeah,
they have managed to turn Kodesh to be set apart from religion into kosher, which is to be absurdly religious.
Embrace. Yeah, yes, yes.
It's they have been unable to make the distinction between what it is to be set apart, Kodesh, and that which is ordinary and common. They do not know and will not accept that which differentiates the filthy and the defiled from the flawless and the perfect. Further, regarding the proper perspective from which to view my Shabbat, they are ignorant hypocrites who conceal the truth such that I am profaned and dishonored along with them. Yahweh himself says the way that religious Jews observe the Shabbat profanes him. Why? Because rather than God liberating us, emancipating us, freeing us, enlightening us, enriching our lives, they would have every possible way of diminishing our freedom, constraining what we can do, and radically shortchanging our productivity. And so God says, I am profaned and dishonored by their Shabbats. They're nothing but hypocrites. They hide the truth. That was Yaketzel 22:26. Well, we have still recording, but we have stopped broadcasting for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot of material. I hope we have some of those who have listened in Boston, Massachusetts, particularly Jews, begin to question their politics, question their religion. A disproportionate number of Jews in America are progressives, and that's the worst form of politics, where you're really forfeiting the single greatest tool that you have today, to the only tool that you can use to find life in the midst of all of this death and carnage, which is your nesama, the ability to use evidence and reason, deduce logical and correct decisions and conclusions, and it's forfeited on the progressive. And way too many Jews are politically agnostic or atheist and progressive and anti-Israel. And a disproportionate number are not just religious, but they're ultra-Orthodox, running around in their black suits and curly cues and black hats and oppressing women, depriving their youth of any hope. And so we're hoping that you, as a listener, begin to see the world of Jews from Yahweh's perspective. He made a promise to Abraham that he's going to keep. He is going to reconcile a remnant of his. It would be wonderful if you were among them. And for that to occur, you need to walk away from Judaism. You know it's wrong. You need to leave the Talmud for the Torah. Embrace his prophets. Stop being political. The first condition of the covenant, to walk away from your country, to walk away from Babel, from walk away from societal customs and the family of man, so that we can walk to God and allow him to perfect us, so we can trust and rely upon Yahweh, such that we closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of his relationship agreement, understand what he is offering and expecting in return. With the fifth condition of the covenant, that we circumcise our sons and raise them so that they remember the covenant. This is where we are. We're approaching the celebration of Pesach. It is another situation where rabbis have made a mockery of it. Almost everything wrong. They don't recognize that Pesach is the doorway to life. The Pesach Seder plate is like Cain's offering to God, where it's everything but the lamb. In the midst of the most important day, Matzah, the celebration of Chag Matzah, the center point of Yahweh's plan of reconciliation and redemption, and yet it's been relegated to an agreement and no longer separated or celebrated as the means to sponge our souls of the fungus of religion so that we can all be adopted and born into Yahweh's family, becoming his covenant sons and daughters, such that on Shavuot, which has also been fulfilled, we are enriched and empowered, we're enlightened and emancipated. All of these are corrupted by the religious. But the truth is out there. If you're listening to this program and you are a Jew, please go to yadaya.com, Y-A-D-A, it means to know in Hebrew, to become familiar with, to acknowledge. Yah or Yahweh is God's name. It's time to acknowledge and recognize Yahweh. Go to yadaya.com and begin reading. The Introduction to God is a great place to start. Come to know who Yahweh is. Come to know what he has to say to his people. Come to know his timing, what he's offering, what he's expecting in return, how much time you have left to get this right. We exist. These books were written. These shows are produced primarily for you, but also for Yahweh's family, to help feed and nurture and support the covenant. Well, we thank you for listening. Kirk, thank you for the research that you did and for being part of this program. Yes. Normally, I would apologize for starting off on such a sour note with a recap of the news. But in this particular case, the news is the prophecy.
Coinciding, that's unbelievable.
The prophecy is the news. They are one and the same. So it's important to hear.
Yes, sir.
One
Thank
other
you.
Thing is that I think the show now is linked to the two of us who live out here in the Atlantic time zone, which means that it did not maintain its time when the United States went to the daylight savings time. And so we are late from that point of view. And it's probably something that I should rectify so that the show starts in recognition of daylight savings time, since I think Congress is about ready to establish it as the primary time for the U.S. that we won't be going and switching back and forth. But in the middle of the Caribbean Sea and the U.S. Virgin Islands, we don't switch our clocks. We're far enough south that there isn't enough of a difference, so we don't observe it, and that's why the show began at a different time, as Mickey's hands were on the different numerals on your watch. And I'll see if I can fix that going forward.
Some folks are working on it, I think, so they're looking for you to tell them what to do. Yes, indeed.
Thank you for listening. Okay. We look forward to being with you next week. We're going to continue to make our way through Yakatel. I think that even the chapter that that follows, which begins with a review of Daniel and then goes into Malachi, the last of the prophets, is something we should also consider. But, of course, we're moving towards Pesach Passover, and we're going to want to have at least one program on Pesach, one on matzah. And but fortunately, this is a year where I can celebrate and be comfortable that with so many people helping us edit these books and republish them, we do now have three completely newly translated and all new commentary on the Moed Mikre. They are now in three volumes versus one. The first is called Mikra, which is an invitation to be called out and meet with God, to be welcomed in his company. And so we begin with Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim in the Mikra Invitations volume. This is followed by the Harvest, which presents Shabuah and Teruah. Shabuah is seven sevens after matzah. It's about being empowered and enriched, emancipated and enlightened within the covenant family, so that we're prepared to work as heralds on Yahweh's behalf during Teruah. Teruah is the celebration of conveying the message, both good and bad, to be consistent with Yahweh's presentation and the Torah and prophets, where in the Torah it's fairly even between his condemnation of religion and politics and his presentation of his guidance as it relates to forming a relationship with him. As we move to the prophets, of course, the overwhelming message is if you don't stop being religious, the consequence is going to be death. The purpose of Teruah is for us to convey that message. The final volume, it's six now of Yada Yahweh, is on the Moed. The Moed are the eternal witness and the restoring witness to the meeting times that Yahweh has established. In it, we present Kippurim, which is by far the most discussed Mikre, or Mikra in the singular, among the seven. It is the day of Yahweh's return. It is the entire focus, for example, of the book of Zechariah. It's devoted entirely to Yahweh's return on Mikra of Yom Kippurim. It's the day of reconciliations. It's based on the same term, Kippurath, that is, and Kippar, that is the basis of the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And so that is part of Volume 6, which is the third volume of the Moed Mikra. And then, of course, that concludes with us coming home as the earth is is restored back into the conditions found in the Gan Eden with Sukkah, where we camp out with our Heavenly Father. Those are all new. They are rich with content and insights. And so for Yah's family, we now have really effective tools to help us get the most possible meaning and understanding out of these days.
Yes, sir.
So thank you all for listening. We look forward to being with you next week. May Yah bless. And let's have a wonderful week. Learn as much as we can and share God's message with all who will listen. Good night.
Hear, hear. Night.